Chapter 11. The next thing we had to do was figure out how to get into the Gnarls. It wasn't a simple question. Like the name suggested, everything about the Gnarls was tricky. According to the thaumaturgical research papers Sybil looked up for me, the entrance to the Gnarls moved to a different spot in the city every few minutes. According to the forums for conspiracy theorists who'd turned finding the Gnarls into a competitive sport, though, those locations tended to repeat. The closest one was only a few miles away. So that was the address I gave Nick as we got into the car. And discovered a new problem.
"Ah, come on!"
he growled, baring his teeth as he attempted to grip his steering wheel with both of his left hands. I bit my lip. "Do you want me to drive?" Nick shot me a look so blistering I swear I lost skin.
Sorry, I said, cringing back into my seat. It was just an offer.
A ridiculous one,
he muttered. Then his gray eyes snapped back to me.
Can you drive?
I've played driving games.
Mostly of the crash derby variety, but I understood the basic mechanics of physically piloting a car.
You know, in theory.
He grimaced.
I'll stick to my two left hands. You freaked the first time you watched me drive through the DFC traffic without a computer. I don't even want to be in the car when you try it yourself.
Couldn't argue there. Is there another way I can help?
Yes,
he said, placing his right left hand on the stick shift.
Be patient.
I was patient as a saint. I sat in my seat without a word for 10 full minutes while Nick figured himself out. Finally, after he'd adjusted his hands for what had to be the millionth time, Nick started the engine and pulled us out, driving us very, very cautiously into the wreath of roads that surrounded the diner. According to the internet, the closest entrance to the Gnarls was beneath the Second Renaissance Center, a 14-tower complex that was part office building, part convention center, and part corporate hotel. It was also the busiest tourist district in the city at the heart of the downtown portion of the riverfront. Naturally, then, parking was hell. We ended up in an auto-sorted magazine deck 4 blocks away from our destination, much to Nick's chagrin. But there was no other choice. Unless we wanted to circle for hours stalking the 10 spots where street parking was allowed, magazine decks were the only option in this part of the city. As the name suggested, they worked just like magazines, except instead of being packed with bullets, they were packed with cars. You drove your vehicle onto a metal plate, and the machinery picked it up and stuffed it into a metal chute full of other cars on plates. When you wanted it back, you put your ticket into the machine and waited for the magazine to cycle back around to your car. I didn't blame Nick for hating it. It was a rough-and-tumble way to park with no way to get your car back quickly if you needed it. If his new hand hadn't been tugging on him so hard, he probably would have demanded we go somewhere else. But I could see the twitches in the synthetic muscles on the back of his hand going crazy, which I took as a good sign. "We have to be getting close," I said, securing the strap for my messenger bag with Dr. Lyle's notes across my chest beneath my poncho.
"I just don't understand why it would be here,"
Nick grumbled, slinging on his own bag full of combat supplies, which now included his right hand.
"This place is a zoo. Nothing but overpriced tourist nonsense. I thought the Gnarls were supposed to be the DFZ's heart. Why would she choose to open it here?"
That was a good question. The Second Renaissance, or 2R, according to the souvenir t-shirt carts that lined the sidewalk, was classic DFC tourist trap at its most exuberant. It was still divided between the skyways and underground, but there were more connecting escalators, stairways, and elevators in these few blocks than anywhere else in the city. The convention complex even had a big ground-level entrance with a courtyard, so guests could experience the famous DFC underground without technically having to leave the hotel. The skyways above were full of boutique stores and fancy restaurants with expense account pricing, while underground blocks surrounding the center looked like they'd come right out of a movie set. There were no cheap concrete squares here. This was what was known as a free build zone,
A place where people could build their own buildings instead of renting space in whatever DFZ decided to push out of the ground. Since these zones only seemed to be in super hot areas, the result was always pure capitalist insanity. And the 2R was no different. We walked past structures made of shipping containers that had been welded together, and buildings that had been built out over the street, turning the sidewalk into a tunnel in an effort to expand their floor space. There were buildings built to look like they'd come from old Detroit, complete with fake damage and painted-on weathering, and buildings that were nothing but stairs, leading to single-person-wide alleyways filled with even more shops. One block had abandoned even the pretense of structures and simply built scaffolding so they could stack as many street carts onto the lot as possible, using giant AR projectors to beam advertisements down into the river of customers that was constantly flowing by.
"This can't be right,"
Nick said angrily, swatting at the dancing images of souvenir plastic beer steins projected from the cart suspended on steel cables above our heads.
"This place is so far down the rabbit hole, it's practically a parody. It's not the real DFZ.
"Who are we to say what's the real DFZ?" I asked, grabbing onto his arm to keep from getting squished against the wall of European tourists eagerly taking pictures to our left. "Spirits are defined by their domains, remember? You're right when you say this place is solid stereotype, but I think that's exactly why the Gnarls open here. I mean, just look at it." I swept my hand across the glaringly bright street. We were almost to the base of the 2R, and the crowds and the commerce had only gotten denser. Cars couldn't even drive on the streets down here. It was just an ocean of people, surrounded by a neon and LED-lit canyon of closet casinos, souvenir shops, vending machine bars, single-use joy parlors, and card-operated VR brothels. There were pawn shops with human organs for sale in the windows, and pet stores full of animals that were banned everywhere else in the world. There were fight bars, topless bars, drug bars, bars where you paid interesting people to pretend to be your friends. The whole place was a chaotic, unregulated, booze and drug-soaked nightmare of greed, hedonism, and reckless ambition. It was simultaneously the worst of humanity and the height of human ingenuity and creativity, as shopkeepers fought to one-up each other and corner the rich flow of gullible tourist money. If you said DFZ to someone who didn't live here, this was exactly what they'd envision. And that made my heart pound with anticipation. "This has to be it," I said, pulling up my map and zooming in as far as I could.
"Sybil, show me the entrance locations."
A smattering of red dots appeared across my augmented vision.
"Here's all the ones reported in the last 2 months," my AI said, flipping my map into 3D to show depth. "They're almost all below your current position, though. You'll have to find a way down."
That wasn't hard. There was a giant flashing down arrow right next to us, with a sign promising even more shops on the lower levels. I wasn't aware this street had a lower level, but given that there were shops suspended on cables above my head, nothing surprised me anymore.
"Come on," I said, tugging on Nick's armored jacket. "Let's go down."
Keeping his actual left hand in his false pocket where his gun was, Nick helped me push through the gawking crowd to the stairwell, which turned out to be a storm drain someone had ripped the cement cap off and replaced with a spiral staircase lined with flashing string lights. With no small amount of trepidation, I made my way down, pausing to put on my cleaning gloves before I grabbed the sticky-looking railing. Unsurprisingly, given the entrance, we came out in the stormwater system. Or rather, what had been the stormwater system. Someone had bricked over the upstream pipe to divert the runoff into another drain, leaving the 10-foot diameter pipe running below this street dry enough to convert into an underground mall. The pipe itself was just the main drag. Individual shops had dug further, cutting through the pipe cement wall and into the dirt behind it to create spacious caves. It was mostly gambling, sex shops, and bars, but there were plenty of normal restaurants too, along with barbershops, nail salons, dry cleaners, and capsule hotels. That last part surprised me. After the terrifying stairwell, I'd expected the stuff down here to be extra salacious. Now that I thought about it, though, the choice was actually pretty practical. When nothing was illegal, it made sense to put the really shocking stuff right out in front for maximum impact. The rest of it, the normal everyday stores and services, was swept down to the cheaper real estate. This was probably where the shopkeepers who ran all the craziness up top went for lunch and drinks after work. The base layer of the 2R's commercial ecosystem. It was also not deep enough.
"There's another way down to your left," Sybil whispered in my ear. "Beside the synth sushi shop."
I nodded and motioned for Nick to follow me, turning sideways to squeeze down the maintenance tunnel where the restaurant stored its trash cans. Once we got past that, the tunnel started going down, taking us away from the blocked-off storm pipe into another system of tunnels. One that wasn't on Sybil's map.
"Where are we?"
Nick asked, looking at the curved, water-stained walls. I switched on the lights on my goggles so I could see. "I think it's one of the old train tunnels," I said, pointing at the metal rails that were still embedded in the crumbling floor. "There were a couple that followed the river in old Detroit, so freight could move through the city without turning it into a train yard. I'm not sure if this is part of the Windsor Tunnel or the old Michigan Central Line, since things down here have gotten pretty shuffled in the last 80 years. But it's got to be over 150 years old."
"How do you know all this stuff?"
Nick asked, jogging up beside me.
"I've lived in the DFZ since I was 13, and I've never heard anything about underground train tunnels."
I shrugged. "I read about it. I like history. And Detroit's was fascinating even before magic and spirits got involved. This city is full of hidden places. Just make sure you watch out for eyes in the dark. There's a lot of magical beasties who live down here." That wasn't a joke. Judging from the size of the tracks in the mud on the tunnel's floor, this place was a highway for some pretty big specimens. I wasn't a good enough tracker to say which ones exactly, but I'd seen every season of DFZ Sewer Hunters. So I knew all that stuff about giant alligators and lampreys and rats the size of dump trucks wasn't just made up to sell tours. Hunting the things that lived under the DFZ was big business. How else did all those illegal pet shops get their mana-eater larvae and giant alligator eggs?
"I know better than to let my guard down in the dark,"
Nick said, looking over his shoulder to keep an eye on the tunnel behind us.
"I've fought the sort of stuff that lives down here before. It's not fun."
"Did you used to be a hunter?" I asked. Nick shook his head.
"No, never."
"Why not?" Given Nick's metal coating, skill at violence, and love of money, hunting monsters for cash seemed like it would be a natural choice. But he just winced.
"I don't like being underground."
I gaped at him. "But you live in a hole in the ground."
"I live in an apartment," Nick said sharply. "That's a far cry from this."
"Fair enough," I said, looking up at the rounded ceiling dripping with water that was seeping down from the city above. "But are you going to be okay?" Nick was jumpy enough under normal circumstances. I didn't want to think of what would happen if he really freaked out.
"I'll be fine," he said stubbornly. "I don't have to be comfortable to be effective. I'm just saying I wouldn't want to be down here all day. And speaking of, are we close? My hand is getting really jumpy."
"That's a better indicator than I've got," I said, checking my map. "We're in the middle of the thickest cluster of recorded sightings for this area. According to the information I've got, the gnarls can open anywhere along here. Assuming they even appear in this part of town today, of course."
"We'll just have to hope we get lucky,"
Nick said, pulling a flashlight of his own out of his bag. Going by my last 5 months, that wasn't a good hope. But there was no point in being a downer. This was where we'd chosen to make our play. So I turned up my lights and started searching down the tunnels, muttering a prayer to the DFC under my breath. "Please," I whispered. "Please, great city. I need this to work. I just started my life here. I don't want it to be over. Please help me out. I don't want to lose." I didn't want to go back under my father's claw. I was still whispering different variations of my fears to myself when I felt something move behind me. There was no sound, no flicker. It was more like a change in the air. Nick must have felt it too, though, because he whirled around even faster than I did, only to stop cold. When I finally managed to turn around, I saw why. There was a cathedral behind us. I'm fully aware of how nuts that sounds. It looked even crazier. The entire span of the old train tunnel we'd been walking down for the last 5 minutes was now completely blocked off by what could only be described as the ornate front of a Gothic cathedral, complete with weathered stone steps, rusted iron railings, and red-painted doors. It looked as if the whole building had been teleported into the ground, and we were just looking at a tiny sliver of it that happened to contain the front door. Even the stained glass windows were still intact, though very scratched up. Whatever this place was, it was old, and it had been through a lot. But despite the damage, it was still standing strong, lighting up the dark tunnel with a warm glow of light through its windows.
"What the hell is that?" Nick said.
I had no idea. Fortunately, Sybil did.
"That's the Wandering Cathedral," she said excitedly. "The one from the urban legends."
"You're going to have to be more precise," I said shakily. "The DFC has a lot of urban legends. So many, even I hadn't read them all."
"This one's special,"
my AI promised, filling my augmented reality with pictures showing the Gothic cathedral in the middle of a highway, or shoved into an underpass, or in the middle of a parking lot, and lots of other places a giant historic church wasn't supposed to be.
"According to the internet, it's one of the few cathedrals from old Detroit that survived Algonquin's initial flooding. It made it 60 more years through the first DFC underground, only to be destroyed during the second Mana crash. Apparently, the DFC was so upset, she rebuilt the whole thing brick by brick and added it to her private collection. There's all sorts of theories about why it surfaces when and where it does, most of which are crazy, but everyone agrees that it's one of the best entrances to the Gnarls."
"Why didn't you say that part first?"
I yelled at her, grabbing Nick's arm.
"These things only stay open for a few minutes."
"I was just trying to answer your question,"
Sybil said, but I wasn't paying attention. I was too busy running up the cathedral steps. The door was locked when I tried the handle, so I banged on it with my open hand, making the wood rattle against the metal frame.
"Hello?"
I cried.
"We need to get inside. We're looking for the Gnarls. It's very important."
"Who are you talking to?" Nick hissed, pulling back his leg for a kick.
"Just break it down."
"No," I shouted, throwing myself between him and the door. "This is one of the DFC's personal buildings. You don't get into the Gnarls by breaking things that belong to the god who controls them."
"Then what are we supposed to do?"
"I don't know," I said, turning back to the door. "It's not like there's instructions." My voice faded. Now that I was no longer running at or beating on the door, I could see there were, in fact, instructions, in the form of a small slip of paper pasted to the wall beside the doors. "Entry fee required," it read. "Please pay below."
"What the?"
Nick said, pushing past me to read the sign for himself.
"There's an entry fee for the legendary magical tunnel system?"
"This is the DFC," I reminded him with a sigh. "Nothing's free here." I just hoped I wasn't screwed. I glanced down at the battered plastic pay pad attached to the stone below the sign, sorely regretting my decision to spend the last of my money gorging on pancakes. Still uncomfortably full, stomach sinking, I reached out to touch the pad, blinking in real surprise when a perfectly normal payment interface popped up in my AR. There was no amount listed, but I didn't have a lot of options. My bank account consisted of exactly 88 cents. So that was what I paid, dropping every last virtual penny into the receptor. The moment I touched the pay button, I felt something bump into my foot. When I looked down, there was a red paper ticket lying on the stone floor with my name printed on it. I picked it up with shaking fingers, not in the least surprised when I felt the bite of magic through my gloves. If the magically appearing cathedral hadn't been a big enough tip-off, this was proof that we were dealing with serious power, which meant there was no room for shenanigans.
"Get your ticket," I told Nick, stepping aside so he could access the payment pad. "Hurry!" "How much was it?" he asked, pulling out his battered phone.
88 cents. His expression brightened enormously.
"That's not bad,"
he said, tapping the number into the payment interface, which appeared on his phone screen since he was a savage who didn't have AR.
"I was worried it was going to ask for my soul or my firstborn or..."
He cut off with a curse as a bright red error message appeared on his screen.
88 cents is insufficient,"
he read in a furious voice.
"Why? That's what you paid?"
I shrugged. "Maybe it's different based on the person."
"Why would that be?"
"It's a magical moving cathedral," I said helplessly. "I don't know. Just keep trying." Muttering angrily under his breath, Nick did as I asked, entering higher and higher numbers into the payment screen. Finally, when he got to $100, the button turned green, and a ticket just like mine but with his name on it appeared at our feet.
"This is extortion," Nick growled, snatching the ticket off the ground. "Why did mine cost so much more than yours?"
"Because she paid more than you."
We both jumped. The voice was as creaky and old as the cathedral itself, but it wasn't in my head like the empty winds had been. A few breathless seconds later, I realized it wasn't a spirit at all. It belonged to a short, pale figure with a stooped back, stringy gray hair, gray skin, and white eyes that reminded me of a blind cave fish's that blinked at me when the cathedral door opened.
"Paid all that she had,"
the person went on, their voice so old and scratchy I couldn't tell if they were a man or a woman, or if it even mattered.
"Be glad the cathedral did not charge you the same, Nicola Koss."
Nick took a step back.
"Right," he said meekly. "Thank you for the discount, then."
"Can we come in?" I asked nervously. The way into the Gnarls was only supposed to appear for a few minutes, and we'd wasted most of that trying to pay Nick's entry fee. It would be just my luck if the cathedral vanished just when we got the door open. Rather than answer, the cave fish person stepped back, which I took as an invitation to rush inside. Nick was right behind me, getting through just before the cathedral doors slammed on his back. A heartbeat later, I felt the same sensation of movement I'd noticed earlier, only now it was all around me, making my stomach roll as the wandering cathedral left the tunnel and went who knew where. I said, looking around at the cavernous church. "So now that we're in, could you please tell us what this place is exactly?"
"And who you are," Nick added with a glare.
I elbowed him in the ribs for being rude, which I'm pretty sure hurt me way more than it bothered him. His armor plating was hard. I was rubbing my bruised elbow when the bent figure laughed.
"Death gods aren't the only ones who've picked up priests,"
they said, hobbling up the aisle toward the place where the altar would have been if this had still been a functioning church. Now the space between the choir pews was decorated like a living room, complete with a couch, where, after a bit of groping around to find the right spot, our hosts sat down.
"I am nameless,"
they continued when they got comfy. Nick arched an eyebrow.
"Is nameless your name or a description?"
"Both,"
Nameless said.
"Sexton of the Wandering Cathedral and Blind Priest of the DFZ."
One of the white cavefish eyes winked at me.
"The blind part was my own addition." I like to differentiate myself from the others.
Others? Nick said. How many more of you are there?
Quite a few, Nameless replied. It is a city of millions. The DFC can't do everything herself, so she outsources. You should be familiar with that, since you're both cleaners. The priesthood's the same. We take care of the idiots who are always trying to worm their way into the city's secret spaces. And in return, the city gives us a cut of the entry fees.
The priest's wrinkled face broke into a toothless smile.
It's good business for everyone involved. But between you and me, I have the best office.
You absolutely do, I assured Nameless, speaking quickly before Nick could say anything to antagonize our host further. But I promise we're not here to steal the city's secrets. We're actually looking for something that was hidden in the Gnarls by someone else, a man named Dr. Theodore Lyle.
I have no idea who that is, Nameless said with a shrug. But you're welcome to search all you like. Understand, though, that everything in the Gnarls is property of the DFZ by default. Even if you find what you're looking for, unless you can prove ownership, you won't be able to take it out.
I started sweating bullets. I hadn't counted on ownership being an issue. Before I could come up with something, though, Nick answered for me.
That's no problem, he said, pointing at me with his thumb. When she bought Dr. Lyle's safe house at a cleaning auction, his dead body was still inside it. Rather than issue a refund, broker told her she could take her fee out of the stuff inside, but all she found was a bunch of papers. They aren't worth a 20th of what she paid for the place, which means she's still short. Since the DFZ has already formally declined to offer her a refund via the cleaning office, I feel it's reasonable to say that everything related to those papers belongs to her as valid compensation for services rendered.
By the time he finished, my jaw was on the ground. Nick scowled.
Why do you look so shocked?
Well, I said, scrambling. I didn't expect you to go all lawyer on me.
I'm not a lawyer, he said. I'm a cleaner. The DFZ doesn't have a lot of laws, but a lot of the ones it does have apply to our business. So I made it my business to learn them. That's just common sense.
Not common enough, apparently, because it had never occurred to me. I hadn't even considered that I might have a legal claim on Dr. Lyle's ritual, but I was so, so glad that Nick had. Yeah, I said enthusiastically, turning back to Nameless. What he said! Nameless scratched the wispy white hairs on their chin thoughtfully.
It sounds plausible enough, they said at last. But it's not my call. The DFC will make the final decision. But so long as there's no one with a stronger claim, I'd say you're safe.
My claim is the strongest, I said confidently, pointing at Nick's second left hand. We're here with the blessing of the deceased as communicated by the empty wind. Finding Dr. Lyle's ritual and reclaiming it is the best way to honor his memory. It's practically a religious rite. That was stretching the truth a bit, but Nameless didn't seem to care.
The empty wind is none of my concern, they said. My business is with the living city, not the dead. If you want to go into the Gnarls, be my guest. You've already bought your ticket, so I couldn't stop you even if I wanted.
All right, I said nervously. Then, because it seemed like something I should ask, I added, are there any rules we need to follow? Things we should know before we go in? The priest burst out laughing.
Where do you think you are, girlie? You're stepping into the heart of the DMZ! There's no rules here! Though, if you want to survive, you'd do well to remember that the city is not, and never will be, your friend.
Nick snorted.
Why would we ever think that?
People think all kinds of things,
the priest said with a shrug.
Including that calling a city their home is a two-way street. But the DFC doesn't work that way. She's not kind, nor moral or fair. She has no compassion, no sympathy for the plight of those who live within her. That's not her fault. She doesn't have the freedoms we mortals enjoy. Her mind, her soul, even her body does not belong to her. She is not an individual. She is a spirit, the soul of a living city. She can only be what we've made her. Do you understand?
I wasn't sure that I did. I'd always thought of the DFC as a whimsical god who did whatever she liked without caring how it affected the ants she crushed under her moving buildings. To hear Nameless say it, though, the city sounded almost pitiable. A prisoner of other people's expectations. What does she care about, then?
Opportunity,
Nameless said, giving me a smile.
From the moment it rose from the soggy ruins of old Detroit, the DFZ has been a city where anything is possible. A city of freedom, where people can be as horrible or as wonderful as they wish, with no authority standing in their way. It's a place where everyone's an outsider. Anyone can start afresh. And nothing can be taken for granted. That is the DFZ. She's not an easy god to love. But you must understand her at least a little. Because you're both still here.
I didn't know about that. I'd come to the DFC because it was across the ocean and because my father hated it. He thought it was a callous, dirty pit that humanity had dug for itself and deserved to wallow in. Honestly, when I'd first moved here, I agreed. I knew I was moving into hell. I'd just preferred this hell to the one I'd left back home. Now, 3.5 years in, I still didn't think my father was wrong. But I understood the nuances better. The DFC was cruel and chaotic. But there were times when it was wonderful, too. That wasn't enough to make me worship her, as Nameless did. But I finally felt like I understood what the Gnarls were. They were the DFZ in her purest form. And if that was the case, then I knew how to survive here. Okay, I said, looking at Nick. Ready?
I've been ready for the last 5 minutes,
he said irritably.
I just don't know how to get out of here.
He nodded at Nameless.
You seem friendly with the talcum powder priest. Ask how we get to the Gnarls.
Actually, you're already there,
Nameless said while I sputtered.
The Gnarls are why the wandering cathedral wanders. If you want to reach them, just turn around and walk out. The ticket you bought is good for one round trip. So don't lose it, or you'll never come back.
Good to know,
Nick said, putting his ticket in his jeans pocket as he walked back to the door.
Opal.
Shoving my ticket into my pocket as well, I hurried after him. Thank you for your help.
Just doing my job,
Nameless said, leaning back on their couch.
But do feel free to leave a tip on your way out if you enjoyed the service.
I was definitely going to tip big the moment I got money. This had been very educational. Helpful was still up in the air. But at least I no longer felt like I was flying blind as I followed Nick out the door and into an absolutely wild world.